And welcome back, Dr. Knowledge with us. And we're going to take your calls with Dr. Knowledge when we come back. His latest book is called The All-Time Book of Fascinating Facts. Back with Dr. Knowledge and your phone calls. Let's go to a little more trivia here. You talk about all ladybugs. Are they female? Now, that's interesting.
And the funny thing is, George, that half of the ladybugs aren't female.
So why do we call the males ladybugs?
You know, they have that name. There are a couple of theories, but the most accepted one by most historians seems to be that, first of all, ladybugs are very good at killing pests.
Yes.
And there are a lot of farmers that bring in ladybugs.
Turn them loose.
For that reason. Anyhow, the story of the origin of the name, the monks in France had vineyards, and they had a real bad season when there were a lot of insect pests that came in and ruined their wine growing. And here came a bunch of ladybugs who killed the pests and saved the monks'
Did you forget it?
No. They saved. They saved the vineyards. They saved the monks' vineyards. Excuse me. And so the monks gave them. They named these insects, these bugs, after the Virgin Mary, Our Lady, and called them ladybugs. And that's the most accepted reason why they have that name. Ladybugs named after Our Lady, the Virgin Mary.
They're supposed to be good luck, aren't they?
Yeah, that's another thing. They're, you know, good all the way around. But only about half of them lay eggs. Only about half of them are female. And the rest are males. I don't know how they feel about that being called ladybugs, but that's where the name... Most word experts feel that's where the name came from those monks in France.
You talk about a U.S. state that has the same name as a foreign country.
Yeah, with this question, George. We say which U.S. state does have the exact same name as a foreign country. There's a reason why we put that word exact in there. We'll get to that in a minute.
Well, because I would have said New Mexico if you didn't.
Right, that is a partial name. Of course, the name of the country is just Mexico, but we do have a state called New Mexico, so it's not the exact same name. But we do have the answer is Georgia. There is a country.
Soviet Georgia, the old Georgia. Soviet Georgia. Yeah.
Exactly, in Southwest Asia. That is the name of the country, Georgia, and of course that's the full name of our state, Georgia. So that is the correct answer, Georgia.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's pick it up by going to James in Kansas City, Missouri. Hey, James, welcome.
Hi there, George. How are you doing?
Hey there.
I have a question for our trivia guy there. What's the origin of ketchup, and why was it invented?
Well, ketchup, you said ketchup? Did I hear it correctly?
Ketchup.
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 Yeah, okay. It has a couple names, but the Heinz company, H.J. Heinz, Henry J. Heinz, made ketchup so popular, and that was their main product and has been for many years, changed the name to ketchup just because that's the way it's pronounced. It's also, there are some companies that don't spell it that way. They spell it C-A-T instead of K-E-T. And that there are competitors of the Heinz company that do spell it that way.
Well, it's a different kind of thing because a lot of people pronounce it different ways, don't they?
Yeah, but I think the most common pronunciation is ketchup.
Ketchup.
And Mr. Heinz, that was his first big product back in the 1870s. His name was Henry J. Heinz. That's where H.J. Heinz comes from. And he's the one who really popularized ketchup and came up with that name. The phonetic spelling made it easy to remember.
Well, here's one, too, that a product's name has become what the product is when tissue paper is really tissue paper, but everybody calls it Kleenex.
That's right.
It's amazing marketing they did.
Yeah, for sure. And that happened after World War One. Kleenex became a popular product. They had used that for bandages in the soldiers, and then after the war, they figured out what they could do with it. Kimberly Clark, the company, and they got a... It was originally marketed as... I'm trying to remember the whole story here, because in fact we have this in the book, and it was originally used as a makeup after the war. Nurses had used it during World War One, and then after the war, it was used as makeup remover by women. And in, I think it was 1929, the company got a call from a woman who said, "My husband stole my Kleenex. He's obviously not using it to take off makeup, but he's using it to blow his nose." And this is a true story. And they started marketing
for
that. That's right. And you're right, George. There's the same product is sold under a lot of different names, a lot of different manufacturers. It's not called Kleenex officially. That's a registered name made only by the Kimberly Clark Company. But so many similar boxes are called Kleenex, even though that's really
not absolutely. I mean, you look at the little box of Puffs. Yeah. I don't think anybody calls it Puffs.
Yeah.
It's Kleenex.
Kleenex. There are a lot of words like that that became, you know, common words, even though they were originally trademarks.
Let's go to Holly, the Big Island in Hawaii. Welcome to the program. Hi, Holly.
Hi, Holly.
Good evening. Last time I spoke to you, remember the Koki frogs?
I love those Koki frogs.
And they're out there right now, but my house got covered with lava after that. And so,
oh, did it? From Kilauea.
Yeah, a year ago. I called you around our birthday. Our birthdays are around the same day, and I think I'm a year older than you. But, I suffered lava disaster here.
Are you okay now?
Yeah, I'm just now getting started on a new piece of land.
Just hold your phone up for just a second, if you would, Holly. I want to hear those frogs. I can hear them. Let's see. Just hold your phone up. Yep, you can just hear them. You can just hear them.
Can you hear them?
Yep, you sure can. But go ahead.
So my question is, what state is really, one of the 50 states is not really a state? You know this answer, George.
One of the 50 states is not really a state.
Remember Dr. Kayano-Sai?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Chart, Mr. Knowledge?
Well,
have we stumped you?
No, I don't know. We have Rhode Island. Is that the answer?
No.
It's the wrong answer. So Hawaii was never annexed. They took a vote and it was 100% no. And so,
well, we took it.
They just took it, and so they did a disinformation campaign in the schools and everywhere. And by the time they declared statehood, everyone had amnesia, and they had their memories erased through the educational systems and everything else. And so, when the queen was overthrown, she asked everyone, "Please do not." They put her in jail. Or they put her in house arrest, and she told everyone, "Do not, you know, fight," because she didn't want to.
She didn't want anybody hurt.
She didn't want to shed not
she
one
very,
drop.
She was
of
very
blood.
Popular, right?
And she said, "Surely, when the United States hears of this, they will make the correction, and everything will be straightened out." And actually, President Grover Cleveland, tried to straighten it out, and he went to Congress, and Congress denied him the ability to straighten it out. And they went forward, and they went forward with statehood. But at this time, it's a de facto statehood, and everything that has been recorded illegally, because actually Hawaii is under occupation. And the people in Hawaii are considered protected persons under international law. And when you take over another nation, see, Hawaii was not just like the Indians. This was a real nation, a real...
It was on its own. It was self-sufficient.
Yeah, we have treaties with other nations. And, definitely, it's a kingdom.
But you're part of the United States now, so that's not all bad.
And one time, Hawaii was called the Sandwich Islands, right?
The Sandwich Islands.
Named after Lord Sandwich, who was the head of the naval ministry in England. When Captain Cook first came there, he named the islands Sandwich Island. So we almost had a state called Sandwich.
Which do you say is the single most important event in the last 1,000 years? That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a good question, George, and I think most people will agree with this. And it was Walter Cronkite, the former TV news announcer, who wrote a big piece on this, and we took that information, and I think we agree with him, and I think maybe you and your listeners will agree. This is in the last 1,000 years, the most significant thing that's happened. And the answer, this happens to be the 50th anniversary of it.
The landing on the moon.
Right. The fact that we proved that we could leave Earth, land safely on another object outside of Earth, and return to Earth safely. Now, Cronkite said, for example, in the next 400 years, space travel and space exploration and space people landing on other objects in space will probably be very common, but they'll look back and say the first time it was ever done successfully was by the United States in July of 1969, and that probably is the most significant thing that has happened in the last 1,000 years. We did prove that we could leave Earth and return safely, and as I say, it probably will become very common in future years, but this was the first, and we proved we could do it.
I remember that episode with Walter Cronkite.
Yeah. Let me get back to one thing on your previous listener when I said Rhode Island. Rhode Island really has the wrong name, which is what I was thinking about, because Rhode Island is not an island.
No, it's not an island.
It's on the mainland of the United States. Yeah, it has the name Rhode Island. So we have the story in there how I got that name, but just to clear that up.
Let's go to Linda Marie in Medford, Oregon. Hello, Linda. Welcome to the program.
Hi, George. Hi, Dr. Knowledge.
And, hi, Linda.
And happy belated birthday, George.
Thanks.
Just wanted to ask you, see if I can stump you with this. What key do most car horns beep in? Do you know this, Dr. Knowledge?
No, I don't. That's a good question.
What's the answer to that one, Linda?
It's a key of F. Hmm. F is in Frank.
Any particular reason that was true?
No, don't know any don't know the reason. Just found that out. But here's something I don't know: is you were talking about hot dogs, but do you know how did they become weenies, wieners, or frankfurters as we know them now?
Yeah, I can give you the answer to that, and they are just very much like hamburgers. We have a question: why in the world are they called hamburgers when there's no ham in them? And the reason they're called hamburgers, and we'll get to wieners in just a minute, the reason they're called hamburgers is we had a big German immigration to the United States in the late 1800s, and the people from Hamburg, Germany, brought with them their custom of serving ground meat, which was not common in the United States. And people started calling the ground meat hamburgers after the people from Hamburg, Germany. And as we say in our book, the all-time book, Fascinating Facts, the next time you have a hamburger with somebody, you say, hey, there ain't no ham in here. Why in the world are they called hamburgers? And it's named after their city. They're named after their city of origin, Hamburg, Germany, very much like frankfurters were named after Frankfurt, Germany, where they were very prominently made. And the name wieners comes from Vienna. The German German language, and in Austria they also speak German. They don't call the country Vienna. They call it Wien, W-E-I-N, and that's where wieners, that's where the name came from. They made a lot of wieners there, just like frankfurters in Frankfurt, Germany, and they used the name wieners from the name of the German name of Vienna.
Well, with Dr. Knowledge, his latest book is called The All-Time Book of Fascinating Facts. His website, knowledgeinanutshell.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com for you. How about the Father's Day coming up right around the corner? You say the founder of Father's Day was never a father. Was it a woman who found Father's Day?
Yes, it was. It was a woman named Sonora Dodd from Spokane, Washington, and she was sitting in church one Sunday on Mother's Day, and they were having a service honoring mothers. And she thought, as that was going on, she thought about her father, who had raised, her mother had died, and her father had raised herself and her three brothers. And she thought, wouldn't it be nice to honor fathers who her father had done so much to help raising her? And she went to her clergyman and said, you know, we have a Mother's Day service. Why can't we have a Father's Day service? And this happened to be the third Sunday in June. It was the second Sunday in May, which was Mother's Day. And until the clergyman agreed with her and got other clergymen in Spokane to also do the same thing, by the time they could arrange all that, it was the third Sunday in June. So they had a Father's Day service in Spokane on that third Sunday in June. The newspapers there carried the story, picked it up. The news traveled across the country, and gradually other places started honoring Father's Day as well. And again, it was always on the third Sunday in June, which it still is. And one of the oddities that we have in the All-Time Book of Fascinating Facts is that the founder, supporter, the creator of Father's Day was not a father. It was this woman, Sonora Dodd, just like the founder of Mother's Day was not a mother. Her name was Anna Jarvis. She was a school teacher in Grafton, West Virginia. She is the one who wanted to honor her mother. Her mother had passed away on the second Sunday in May, back in the early 1900s, and she went to her minister the next year and said, could we honor her mother on that second Sunday in May? And they agreed to do that, and then she got the idea, she was a school teacher, of campaigning to create a national Mother's Day, and she wrote hundreds of letters to congressmen and even to the President of the United States. And finally, in 1914, President Woodrow Wilson bought the idea and proclaimed a National Mother's Day, ever to be, always to be held on the second Sunday in May.
Good move on his part.
Yeah, so anyhow, the creator of Mother's Day was not, this Anna Jarvis, the school teacher, was never married, never had any children. So the creator of Mother's Day was never a mother, and the creator of Father's Day was never a father.
Let's go to Dan, truck driving in Missouri. Hey, Daniel, go ahead.
Hey, George. Question for the doctor there.
Sure.
He touched on when the president wasn't living in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
There's a major event that happened during that, but you never hear about it.
Well, there were a lot of interesting things. There was a four-year period, almost 4 years. Harry Truman moved across the street. President Truman.
Madison House.
Mm-hmm. Blair House.
Oh, Blair House, that's right.
What was the major event, Dan?
They had an assassination attempt.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Oh, that's right, yeah, yeah. They
And you never hear about it, but there was a shootout, and it killed a White House cop, and it killed one of the assailants, all right?
Yes, it did. It killed one of the Secret Service men, and Truman was napping upstairs when this happened. There were three potential assassins who broke down the door at Blair House, got into the house, shot and killed a Secret Service man, injured another.
Yeah, they stormed the place, didn't they?
The amazing thing is Truman is taking a nap. He took naps every afternoon. This is like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And the incredible thing is he had an affair that night, and he came that close to being assassinated. He went on with his regular business, and he took walks every morning. He took like a mile-long walk every morning. The next morning, he took his walk as if nothing had ever happened.
Amazing. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with Dr. Knowledge, and then next hour, it's Open Lines. Well, next hour, we'll have Open Lines, but when we come back in just a moment, final questions and your calls with Dr. Knowledge, his book, All-Time Book of Fascinating Facts, indeed. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. You know, there were two assassination attempts on President Harry Truman at the time, Dr. Knowledge.
Yeah, it's interesting, George, and to finish the story, I don't know if we mentioned this or not, Truman had to move out of the White House almost 4 years because of the major reconstruction and refurnishing of the White House. And the place he moved, I'm not sure we gave enough information on this, it's called Blair House. It's right across Pennsylvania Avenue from the White House. It was built in the early 1800s as a real mansion, and it's used basically when foreign dignitaries, foreign heads of state visit the United States, they often stay there. That's what it was used for years. But they moved Truman. They didn't want him in the White House during all the Reconstruction. And they moved Truman and his family and the whole staff of the White House across the street to the Blair House for almost 4 years. It took that long to do all the Reconstruction at the White House. So that's a great question. Why was there no president in the White House for almost 4 years after World War II? It was right in the late 40s and early 50s that happened. And speaking of presidents, if I may mention this, we just recently got a letter from President George W. Bush, would you believe, about enjoying the book somebody had bought.
Oh, somebody got it for him.
Yeah, isn't that nice? And he wrote the nicest letter. This person who bought the book said, would you autograph it to Mr. Bush and Mrs. Bush, and we did. And he wrote the nicest letter back, said I enjoyed the book, and that Laura, he sent his best, and just a very classy thing.
That was very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Let's go back to the calls. Let's go to Scott in San Luis Obispo in California. Welcome to the program. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Scott.
Scott, you with us? Nope, he's disappeared. Let's try Nancy in Victoria, Texas. Hey, Nance, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, George.
Hello, Nancy.
Hello, Nancy.
Hello. Okay. I have a question for the guest.
Okay.
And my question is what was his most interesting facts about the state of Texas?
State of Texas. Anything pop up on that, Dr. Knowledge?
Well, yeah, Texas has a law, and I'm not sure of the exact wording, but Texas could split into other states. Are you familiar with that, Nancy? And there has been talk over the years of at least splitting the state in two.
I've heard of that.
West Texas, because there are differences in so many things between the east and west in Texas, and of course Texas is so big, it is.
I don't think that'll ever happen, do you?
I doubt it. There's also been talk in Colorado about that.
And what about California seceding from the nation as its own country?
It'd be one of the biggest countries in the world, right?
It would, by itself, sure.
Yeah. And, again, in California, you have a lot of differences between Northern California, north of San Francisco, and, let's say, Southern California. Same thing in Colorado. A lot of rural areas in Colorado are not happy with the politics in the Denver area, and there's been talk about splitting into two. And that raises a question, George. You know, we have 50 states. We started with just 13, and we certainly had a tremendous expansion of our states. Are we going to stop at 50? Will we have more? And if so, you know, where are the new states going to come from?
I would bet Puerto Rico would be the next one.
Yeah, the only problem there is the language.
That's a problem here too now.
the other strong possibility is the District of Columbia, which is not a state.
That's true.
And people who live in D.C. are obviously American citizens. They finally got the right to vote for president, for example. For many years, they couldn't even vote, and it wasn't too many years ago that, in fact, on their license plates, they still have taxation without representation because they don't have senators. They do have a congresswoman, but she can't vote on the floor. She can only vote in committee. So they really don't have representation in the House of Representatives or the Senate. And only in recent years that they've been able to vote for president. So, and they're not a state. So they could be the 51st state. It's possible. Puerto Rico certainly is possible. And we could have some splits. And there are a couple provinces of Canada that have talked about joining the U.S. Conceivably, that may happen. So,
would we have to buy them from Canada?
I don't know what to deal with.
You can't just take it.
No. Although, I guess if the people there voted for it, I don't know. I think that's the least likely of all the possibilities of more states. But it's an interesting question. Are we going to stay with 50? We have a great story, George, on our flag. You know, for many, many years, we had 48 states from, like, 1912 up till the 1950s. We just had 48 states. And, of course, we have a star for each state.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very easy. We had, you know, eight rows of six stars each. Eight sixes are 48. And then Alaska became the 49th state, and that was easy on the flag because then you had seven rows of seven stars. Seven times seven is 49. But then when Hawaii, as your listener called earlier, become a state in 1959, how are you going to put the stars? What arrangement are you going to make to get 50 stars on there? You know, you can't have an even number of rows like we did for eight sixes or 48 and seven sevens or 49. So there was a national contest, and one of the winners of the contest was a 17-year-old high school student from Lancaster, Ohio, who came up with the design we now use with rows of six stars and five stars. I think it's nine rows, totaling 50 states. And he lived for many years after that. In fact, he just passed away in the early 2000s. And we say in our book what a thrill he must have had every time he looked at the American flag that he was one of the designers.
He did it. That's right.
This 17-year-old high school kid. And the other part of the story is that he had submitted that design as part of a classroom project, and teacher had said that if anybody's design won, he would give him an A. Well, when this student showed the design to the teacher, he didn't think it was that good, so he just gave him a B- originally. But then once his design was accepted, he changed the B- to an A.
Let's go to Steve in the state of Washington. Welcome to the program, first-time caller. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Thank you for taking my call.
Of course. Thank
you.
I
have two questions, but if you'll take them. But the first one is, who was the saint that died over 150 years ago and her body is still intact?
I don't know the answer to that. Who was it?
Saint Bernadette of Lourdes.
And where is the body now? Do you know?
It's in France, Upper France. Lourdes is in Lower France. But her body is perfect. She looks like she's sleeping. You can get it on the internet.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Yeah, it is. Oh, and
she's in Nevers, France, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess that's sort of a tourist attraction.
Oh, well, yeah, kind of. I guess you could say that.
She is the one that produced the waters of Lourdes that were the healing waters. And millions of people have been healed there.
That's right. She died in 1879.
Yeah. And she died at, I think she was 37 years old. But her body is perfect. She looks like she's asleep.
That's nice.
What's your other question there, Stephen?
I'm trying to say this, but I forgot what it was.
Okay. All right. Well, let's
we can't answer that one.
Great trivia, though. Great trivia. Now, what's the question about the strangest book ever written?
This is an incredible story, George. There was a guy named Ernest Wright, and his publisher challenged him. It was almost a joke one day. I bet you couldn't write a book, a novel, a regular-sized novel, without using the letter E. So he took the challenge. He tied the letter E on his typewriter. We didn't have computers, keyboards in those days. He had his typewriter, and he tied the E down so he wouldn't accidentally use a word with an E. And he wrote a book. It's called Gadsby, G-A-D-S-B-E-S-B-Y, not to be confused with
The Great Gadsby,
which by F. Scott Fitzgerald. This was called Gadsby. It was a 50,000-word novel, very coherent. You can read it, it reads very well. And with those 50,000-plus words, he never used the letter E. E is the most used letter in our alphabet. And to realize how hard that is, just try yourself writing a couple paragraphs on anything without any word with an E in it, and you'll find it's almost impossible to do. But he was able to write this book. This was in 1939, without the letter E in any word. And he even used some big words, too, like psychological was one. I forget some of it. We have it in our book. Some of the other words he used, big words. And it's very coherent, and it's just incredible. And the book, it's about a mayor in a town whose name was Gadsby. And the book was, you know, fairly popular. It's become a real collector's item now. There are just a few around there. It's very expensive.
Probably cost $1,000 to buy, yeah, or something.
Because, yeah, this book is unique. It's just called Gadsby. Over 50,000 words, not one word with an E in it. And as I say, if you just try yourself to see how hard that is to do, but he did it.
Let's go to Tim, truck driving in California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Timothy, go ahead.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, thank you, George.
Sure thing.
Hi, Dr. Knowledge. I'm kind of a gearhead, and I was just kind of curious if you were familiar with the word the pits, or the pit area, or pit row. Usually it's an area where, in like drag racing or NASCAR or Le Mans, where they fuel the cars and, you know, work on them mechanically, change tires. Just kind of curious if you knew what the origin of that word, where it came from, the pits or the pit area.
Hmm. Never thought of that. That's an interesting question. I guess the area probably resembled a pit, perhaps.
Well, in the early days, the only thing that was cement or asphalt was the track. So a lot of times they had to do the work in the dirt. And so what they would do was dig these holes or these pits where the mechanic would jump down into the hole, and they would roll the car over the top of him, and you'd have one mechanic that would work on it from the bottom, and then another one from the top.
And so they'd call it the pit stop.
It really was a pit, yeah.
Yeah, so eventually there were these rows and rows of these holes or pits that that they would use to service the cars back in the early days.
Yeah, we have a story in our book on why a bullpen in baseball, why in the world is it called a bullpen? And the answer is that in the early days of baseball, the Bull Durham Tobacco Company had advertising signs in many ballparks, and they always put the signs down the foul lines where, in those days, where the pitchers warmed up. And there was a big bull that was part of their trademark. The Bull Durham Tobacco Company had this picture of a big bull, and it was in the area where pitchers warmed up, and people started calling that area, this is in the early 1900s, a bullpen.
Interesting.
After the sign with the bull on it, and we still use that name today, even though we don't have the Bull Durham Tobacco signs anymore, but we still call it a bullpen.
Wasn't there a movie called Bull Durham?
Yeah, Bull Durham, yeah.
I thought so. Yeah. It was a baseball movie.
Yeah, it was a good one.
Next up, Tony in New Hampshire. Let's get you in here, Tone. Go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Hi, Tony.
Hi, how you doing? You guys were mentioning peculiar names for baseball players earlier, and you left one out, Milton Bradley.
The game guy.
The board game company?
Yep.
I think he played for either the Royals or the Dodgers. It was a blue, he was playing for a team that had blue and white colors. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly which team it was.
I think he played for a couple of different teams.
I have a great baseball joke, real quick.
Real quick.
Billy Bragg was boasting that his team won their league championship 9-0. There was 2 grand slam home runs and a single shot home run. They won 9-0, but not a single man crossed home plate. How was that possible?
It was a women's game.
No, they were all married.
I like that. That's funny.
Very good.
Well, Dr. Knowledge, my friend, we are up with time, but keep in touch. What's your next project?
Well, this is it. I put the best of all the stuff.
This is it. Not that you're retiring.
No, not at all. But I looked at all the stuff I had and tried to get some new ones, too, and we have it in the All-Time Book of Fascinating Facts. So we're just talking about this book, and always a pleasure being on with you, George, and your listeners, for sure.
It's always fun. Thank you. Dr. Knowledge, up next, folks, We've got open lines coming up for you on Coast to Coast, so get ready.